We invite you to enter the poetry department of the Bible Library as we pull the book of Job from the shelf tonight. The book of Job is also known as the book of immortality. There are great questions that are set forth in the book. Outstanding among those is chapter 14:14, when the question is asked, if a man die, shall he live again? All the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. Job said in chapter 19 and verse 25, for I know, a lot of great I know statements in the book. You might take note of, I know that my Redeemer liveth and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. That's Job 19, 25 and 26. It's in chapter 32 and in verse 8. Where it is written, there is a spirit in man, and the inspiration of the Almighty giveth them understanding. The book sets forth the problem of human suffering. It's been a problem from the beginning, when sin entered the world in the garden as the tempter beguiled Eve through his subtlety. The first transgression was committed in chapter 3, and thus suffering entered the world. The book of Job is an outstanding book. Job is the main character. Other main characters include his wife, his children, God, Satan, his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, and then Elihu. One of the basic rules of Bible study must be observed as you read and study the book of Job, and that is you have to consider who is speaking. There are lots of different speeches in the book. The devil speaks, the Lord speaks, Job speaks, his three friends speak. There are several rounds of speeches, and you have to take note of who's doing the speaking. And then you have to take in consideration what the Lord said about the things that were being spoken, as he has the final say. One of the things that stands out is the fact that God has the final say. There are a lot of speeches that are made, and there may be a lot of things that are said among us, between us here on earth, as we struggle with different things. But God at the end will have the final say. And really what he says at the end is what matters. A lot of things that people say, maybe some things we even say, may not necessarily be right. But what God says, that's the way that it is. Suffering is a part of this life. Some of you are suffering now. And hopefully you'll find some consolation in the book of Job. He suffered enormous affliction. And no matter what you're going through, no doubt, as you read the book, as you look through it with us tonight, you'll be able to find some things that you can relate to and hopefully will bring you comfort and consolation. We start with Satan's challenges in the first chapter. Job is introduced to us as an outstanding man. How's he described, Jared? Perfect suggests that he was morally and ethically pure. Perfect and upright. He is a righteous man. One that feared God. That's what God's always required of man. The book of Ecclesiastes 12 says the whole duty of man includes fearing God and keeping his commandments. That's Ecclesiastes 12, 13 to 14. He feared God. And what else? Eschewed evil. That word eschew means to turn aside, to go away, to depart. And he turned aside, went away, and departed from evil. There's good and evil. And as Hebrews 5, 12 to 14 points out, through the word of righteousness, our senses need to be exercised to discern the difference between good and evil. Peter penned in 1 Peter 3, 10 and 11. He that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. If you'd been Job, would you have been that man? Perfect and upright, one that feared God and eschewed evil. That's the man that you and I need to be. What a great man. And it is said in verse 8, as the Lord asked Satan this question, hast thou considered, how do you say that? My servant, Job, if the Lord had been talking about you, would he have said, my servant? Some may consider themselves servants of the Lord. Does God view you as his servant? Would he call you my servant? And he said, there is none, how do you say that? Like him in the earth. Could that be said of you? None like him in the earth. He was a man of distinction. An outstanding man. You can't just go along or blend in or try to be like everybody else and the Lord say what? There's none like him in the earth. What a great compliment the Lord paid this righteous man. When the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, who came also among them? Satan. This book shows the influence of Satan. He's been at work from the beginning, hasn't he? He made his first appearance in the garden. The father of lies, John 8:44, told the first lie. What did he say? Ye shall not surely die. When God said, in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Genesis 2:16-17, and Genesis 3. And he's come among the best of people. He, as you see, assaults a righteous man, Job. He assaulted the Lord, didn't he? Matthew 4, you read about the temptation of Jesus as he is led of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And the Lord resisted his advances by saying, it is written, it is written, it is written. He hindered the apostles. He filled whose heart to lie? Ananias. Remember that? Ananias and Sapphira. Who hath filled thine heart to lie? Was the question Peter asked Ananias. Lots of examples that could be cited of occasions when Satan came also among them. And as surely as he came among them, he'll what? Come among us. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. Guess who that includes? You and me, us, right? 1 Peter 5 and in verse 8. So we need to be aware. We need to be vigilant. We must not be ignorant of his devices, lest he get an advantage. We must not give him place or opportunity in our lives. What charge did he bring against Job in the first chapter? John? Yeah. He said in verse 9, doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance has increased in the land. Basically, he's saying the only reason Job is such a devoted servant of yours, he's as faithful as he is, he fears you like he does, he serves you like he does, is because you blessed him so much. So you take away these blessings, and what's going to happen? He'll curse you. So can God trust man to serve him, to fear him, to trust him with him suffering and unable to explain why? If he has adversity instead of prosperity, will he continue? So the Lord allows Satan to test Job within limits. See, the assaults beginning when this challenge is issued in verse 11, put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he'll curse thee to thy face. The Lord said, behold, all that he hath is in thy power, only upon himself put not forth thine hand. And underscoring verse 13, a day, a lot of things happened in a day. A lot can happen in a day, can't it? You know, the Bible says in Proverbs 27:1, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. And you see that illustrated in the book of Job when a day came with four messengers, all bearing disastrous news, calamity, tragedy. And you never know when that day may come, when somebody comes or the phone rings, or you never know when tragedy will strike. It struck Job in unimaginable ways. The messenger in verse 14 said, the oxen were plowing, the asses feeding beside them. The Sabaeans fell upon them, took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword. You remember the report of his substance, how he was the greatest of all the men of the east in verse 3. And his great substance consisted of 500 yoke of oxen and 500 she-asses. The Sabaeans took them all away. While he was speaking, another one came. Remember his sheep? 7,000 sheep. Verse 3. Here's what happened to all those sheep. The fire of God has fallen from heaven, burned up the sheep. The servants are consumed. While he was yet speaking, one right after another, the Chaldeans made three bands and fell upon the camels. He had 3,000 camels. They're carried away, carried them all away. And the servants have been slain with the edge of the sword. While he was yet speaking, remember in verse 2 of chapter 1, there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters, 10 children. What happened? Pete? They're dead. Verse 19, they're dead. They were eating and drinking wine in the eldest brother's house. Came a great wind, smote the four corners of the house. It fell upon the young men, and they're dead. And Job's reaction to all that is expressed in verse 20, when he arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped, and said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That's quite a statement, isn't it? Got to highlight that. What would have been your reaction? How would you have responded? What would you have said? What would you have done? How do you handle problems, adversity, when tragedy strikes? Verse 22 is impressive when it says, in all this, Job what? Sin not, nor charge God foolishly. Could that have been said of you if you'd been Job? Can it be said of you tonight? Sin not, nor charge God foolishly. That wasn't all of it. That's just the first assault. A second challenge is brought forth by Satan when he came also among them in chapter 2. What's his second challenge, Nicholas? Good, very good. Chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. So the Lord allowed Satan to test Job again. What happens to him, Jason? One's bad enough, I hear. Just Abel. He had boils from sole to crown, right? the sole of his foot under his crown, top of his head, the bottom of his foot. His wife said, curse God and die. Right? Verse 9. He said to her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? And it's reported again as he withstands this second assault. In all this did not Job what? Sin with his lips. Could that have been said of you? He still retained his integrity and did not sin with his lips. Chapter 2 and verse 13 concludes with this expression. His grief was what? Very great. His three friends heard of all the evil that came upon him, and they came together to mourn with him and to comfort him. You ought to highlight that in verse 11. To mourn with and to comfort. We'll see how they did in the comfort department. They didn't say anything for how long? A week. They sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him. They got themselves into trouble when they started speaking. They should have just been quiet. So we spend some time now thinking together about the visit of his friends. They came to comfort him, as we saw in chapter 2, but they stay to accuse him of sin. There are rounds of speeches now that occur, three of them, between Job and his friends. And you have to make note of who speaks, is recorded where, and some of the highlights or key points or statements that are made in each of those speeches. The first round takes in chapters 3 through 14. There are 7 speeches. Job speaks first, followed by Eliphaz. Then Job's reply to Eliphaz, Bildad's speech, Job's response to Bildad, Zophar speaks, and then Job will respond to him. So Job's first speech in the book, recorded in chapter 3, it's an expression of his what? His grief. You remember he is a man who experienced great grief. Chapter 2 and verse 13. If your grief has ever been great, you can relate to some of the things that he said. Maybe you can say you felt that way. That I didn't say those exact same words, but those are the words that would have expressed how I felt in time of great grief. He cursed the day of his birth. Verse 1, you might highlight, cursed his day. Chapter 3, verse 1. He said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man and child conceived. The first 10 verses of chapter 3 is basically what he's doing. He's saying it had been better not to what? Not to have even been born. You ever felt that way? Maybe you're going through something so great that brings such grief to you, you'd think it had been better that I hadn't even been born than to endure this tragedy. And he really suggests that it would have been better to have died. He wonders why he was not allowed to die at birth. He said in verse 11, why did I die not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me? Or why the breast that I should suck? You have to understand these statements in light of the context. The great grief that he is experiencing, as we saw the Lord allowing Satan to test him. And the things that he had lost. Imagine losing all of your children like that. Just the loss of a child is great. Take 10 children, lose them all in the same day. All your possessions. Can you imagine? Unimaginable. And so you have to understand these questions, these statements that are being made in light of that context, right? Better to have died, verses 11 and 12. And he thought death would be preferable to life. In verses 13 through 19, he asked why life was given to a man who preferred to be dead. In verses 20 through 23, wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in the soul, which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than for hid treasures, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid and whom God hath hedged in? And he expresses that the thing he greatly feared had come upon him. In verse 25, he said, for the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. Now, you begin to see some of his friends who came to comfort him speak. Eliphaz starts off in chapter 4, and his speech will include the fifth chapter as well. He makes the point that Job should not complain when calamity afflicts him in chapter 4, 1 through 6. Basically, he's being told that the reason that all this has happened is why? You sin. They're accusing him of sin. Because of transgression, iniquity that he has committed. And so he shouldn't be complaining. In chapter 4, verses 4 and 5, Eliphaz says, thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees, but now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. He says, no one perishes being innocent. He said, he was asked this question, verse 7. Whoever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? And so you're not innocent, Job. You're not righteous. Otherwise, these things wouldn't have happened to you. That's his mindset. Then you have his vision in verses 12 through 21. He said, there was a thing secretly brought to him. Mine ear received a little thereof and thoughts from the visions of the night when deep sleep falleth on men. And he was overcome by fear and trembling. Verse 14, fear came upon me and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Here's a bone-shaking vision that Eliphaz has. And that includes verse 12 through 21. In chapter 5, he appeals to the observation of other saints, the first five verses. He said in verse 1, call now if there be any that will answer thee, and to which of the saints wilt thou turn? And points out that affliction is not the work of chance. In verses 6 and 7, although affliction cometh not forth of the dust, neither does trouble spring out of the ground, yet man is born under trouble as the sparks fly upward. And he advises Job to commit his cause to the Lord. He said in verse 8, I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause. That's a good statement. There's some good statements made by some of his friends, even though some of the impressions that they have are false. Some of the conclusions that they are reaching are erroneous. Here's a good statement. I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause. I had to highlight that. We need to do that. Which he went on to say in verse 9, which doeth great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number, who giveth rain upon the earth and sendeth waters upon the fields, to set up on high those that be low, that those which mourn may be exalted to safety. Expression of God's greatness, wonderful, marvelous things that God does. The rain that is given, the waters that are sent, are included in the marvelous things of God. And all that is in this section where he advises Job to commit his cause to the Lord. We need to do that. We need to commit our cause to the Lord, who doeth great things and unsearchable. And he really, from this point forward, instructs Job to accept the Lord's chastisements. He said in verse 17, "Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore, despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty." That's Eliphaz's speech in chapters 4 and 5. Then Job replies to Eliphaz, chapter 6 and 7. He justifies his bitter words of grief. He said in verse 2 and 3, "Oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed and my calamity laid in the balances together." So you have grief and calamity being weighed. He said if they could be weighed, he said they'd be heavier than what? Than the sand of the sea. You ever felt like that? Grief, your calamity is so great, it's heavier than the sand of the sea. The sand is heavy, especially when it's wet. Imagine the sand of the sea, how heavy that is. That's an expression of his great grief. Greater, heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore, he said, "My words are swallowed up." He reaffirms his desire to die in verses 8 through 13. Beginning verse 8, he said, "Oh, that I might have my request." What was his request? What was his desire? "That God would grant me the thing that I long for, even that it would please God to destroy me, that he'd let loose his hand and cut me off. Then should I yet have comfort? Yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One." He rebukes his friends for their lack of sympathy from verse 14 through 23. He said in verse 14, "To him that is afflicted, pity should be showed from his friend." And in verse 15, he said, "My brethren have dealt how? Deceitfully." And I like that. Should have been showed pity, but have dealt deceitfully. As a brook, as the stream of brooks, they pass away. He rebukes Eliphaz for his shallow arguments from verse 24 through 30. There's a good statement he made in verse 24 I call your attention to, and he said, "Teach me and I'll what? Hold my tongue, and cause me to understand wherein I've erred." It's a great statement, an attitude you and I ought to express. Teach me, cause me to understand wherein I've erred. And he said their speeches were as what? Wind, verse 26. Do you imagine to reprove words in the speeches of one that is desperate, which are as wind? And he'll do that again in this book. Good question Job asked in verse 30 in his answer to Eliphaz. He said, "Is there iniquity in my tongue?" That's a good statement. Is there? Is there iniquity in your tongue? Iniquity is another word for sin. Did you know you can sin with your tongue? The psalmist said he would take heed and you keep his mouth with a bridle. He said, "Lest I sin with my tongue." Psalm 39:1. And there are a lot of sins that could be committed with this device, like lying, slander, gossip, evil speaking, cursing and swearing. And is there any of that in your tongue? Is there iniquity in your tongue? Job 6 and 30. This book expresses in many places in poetic language the brevity of life. You ought to take note of expressions of life's brevity. Chapter 7, 1, in his answer to Eliphaz, he said, "Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of an hireling?" So our days are limited. Their days are numbered. He said in verses 6 and 7, "My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle." That's an expression of the brevity of life. Spent without hope. Well, remember that my life is what? Wind. My life is wind. Do you know your life is like wind? shows that death is a finality. There's an end to man's doings here on earth. Once you die, once you're gone, you will not what? There's no return. That's emphasized in the book. The finality of death, the reality of death and its finality. He said in verse 8, the eye of him that hath seen me shall what? See me no more. We see you today. When you go that way, no more. See you no more. He said in verse 9, as the cloud is consumed and vanisheth away, so he that goeth down to the grave shall come up no more. He's talking about there's no more return to this earthly existence, life here under the sun. He shall return no more to his house. That's what he's talking about. Neither shall his place know him no more. There's coming a day when I'm going to go the way of all the earth. And when that happens, I will not return to my house here. You won't see me anymore here. I'll be gone. That's what that's talking about. Job 7, the finality of death. We need to know that. We need to be prepared for that. And then this question, verse 17, what is man that thou shouldest magnify him and that thou shouldest set thine heart upon him? As Job really addresses his thoughts to God in response to Eliphaz. Then Bildad speaks in chapter 8. He compares Job's speeches to a strong wind. Chapter 8 and verse 2, he said, how long wilt thou speak these things? And how long shall the words of thy mouth be like a strong wind? That sound familiar, Job, but in his response to Eliphaz, said in chapter 6 and verse 26, the speeches of one that are as a wind. And he defends God's justice. He's really saying that God struck down Job's children because of their sins. He said in verse 4, if thy children have sinned against him, and he have cast them away for their transgression. If thou wouldest seek unto God betimes and make thy supplication to the Almighty. What did Job do continually for his children? Offered sacrifices. That says something about his concern for their well-being. Bildad appeals to the ancients to show that those who forget God are cut off from verse 8 to 19. He said in verse 8, inquire, I pray thee, of the former age and prepare thyself to the search of their fathers. And again, life in its fleeting nature is expressed in verse 9. He said, for we are but of yesterday and know nothing, because our days upon earth are a what? A shadow. Take note of how life in its brevity is expressed throughout this book. Verse 9, chapter 8. Then Job's response to Bildad in chapters 9 and 10. Note verse 5 beginning, as he talks about God which removeth the mountains, and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger, which shaketh the earth out of her place, and the pillars thereof tremble, which commandeth the sun, and riseth not, sealeth up the stars, which alone spreadeth out the heavens, and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south. Those are constellations that are referenced not only here, but also in chapter 38, 31, and 32, and mentioned by Amos in chapter 5 and verse 8, which doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. What an impressive presentation of the sovereignty of God by Job and his answer to Bildad. He shows that God afflicts both the righteous and the wicked. He said in verse 22, this is one thing, therefore I said, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Again, as you make your list of brevity statements, verses 25 and 26, he said, my days are swifter than a what? A post. That's a messenger. They are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. We're just calling some key statements to mind and expressions from these speeches as he expressed the frailty of life. He cries for a day's man between him and God. He said in verse 33, neither is there any day's man betwixt us. It's like an umpire that might lay his hand upon us both. An arbitrator. And then chapter 10, he said in verse 3, is it good unto thee that thou shouldest oppress, that thou shouldest despise the work of thine hands and shine upon the counsel of the wicked? He is pointing out basically that God is destroying the work of his own hands. He affirms that he is God made. He said in verse 8, thine hands have made me and fashioned me together round about, yet thou dost destroy me. Remember, I beseech thee that thou hast made me as the clay. Wilt thou bring me into dust again? Hast thou not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? Thou hast clothed me with skin and flesh and hast fenced me with bones and sinews. Thou hast granted me life and favor. Our life is God granted. Gotta underscore those. Made me, fashioned me, made me, poured me, curdled me, clothed me, fenced me, granted me. Your life is the gift of God. It's in him that we live and move and have our being. Acts 17 and verse 28. He is God made. He accuses God of hunting and destroying him like an animal. He said in verse 16, thou huntest me as a fierce lion. He said in verse 19, as he renews his request to die, I should have been as though I had not been. I should have been carried from the womb to the grave. Are not my days few? It's a good question. Verse 20. And then again in verse 21, before I go, whence I shall not return, even to the land of darkness and the shadow of death. A land of darkness is darkness itself, and of the shadow of death without any order, and where the light is as darkness. Again, emphasizing the fact that when we die, we go the way whence we shall not return. Then in chapter 11, Zophar speaks. He charges Job with irreverence. Verses 2-4. Would this be comforting to you if you'd been Job when he said, God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth? You deserve a lot worse than you're getting, Job. You know, this is happening because you've been such a bad fella, unrighteous, you've sinned, and God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. Verse 6. Then you have Job answering, chapters 12-14. He said in verse 3, I have understanding as well as you. I'm not inferior to you. Yea, who knoweth not such things as these? He knows as much about God's rule as these friends of his. Right? And how that God does not deal with man on earth according to man's moral character. He shows that nature teaches. That's a good principle. Nature teachings. Verse 7, ask now the beast, they shall teach thee. The fowl of the air, they shall tell thee. Speak to the earth, it shall teach thee. The fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? A lot of things could be learned from nature. Just like looking up and seeing the moon, God's handiwork. Heavens declare the glory of God. He said in verse 10, in whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. Great statements. In chapter 13, he referred to his friends as forgers of lies, physicians of no value. I like that. You're all physicians of no value. He pleads with God. He said in verse 15, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. That's a great statement. And then in verse 23, here's a good attitude. He said, make me to know my transgression and my sin. Make me to know. Do you want to know? Don't tell me. Some people don't tell me. I don't want to know. Job said, I want to know. Make me know. Cause me to understand. What's your attitude about that? Chapter 14, again, expressing the shortness of life, he said, man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble. It cometh forth like a what? Like a flower. He sings a song as the life of a flower and is cut down. Fleeth also as a shadow and continueth not. Verse 12, so man lieth down and riseth not till the heavens be no more. They shall not awake nor be raised out of their sleep. And then the great question, verse 14, if a man die, shall live again? Then in chapter 15, second round of speeches, when Eliphaz speaks, takes up chapter 15 and Job's response to Eliphaz in chapter 16 and 17, I urge you to circle who's speaking in all these chapters. Job answered, remember he called them physicians of no value, forgers of lies. Now what's he say? Miserable comforters. I like that. 16:1. Are ye all? Then note in chapter 16, this speech, verse 22 again, he said, when a few years are come, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. He retains his faith in God in spite of his sufferings. In verse 10 of chapter 17, he said, I cannot find one wise man among you. Then Eliphaz, or Bildad rather, speaks in chapter 18. Job's response, chapter 19, standout statement here in 25 and 26. I know that my Redeemer liveth and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. The most comprehensive teaching in all the Bible on that subject is 1 Corinthians 15. And we sing a great song rooted in this statement. I know that my Redeemer liveth. Chapter 19. Chapter 20, Zophar. Speaks. And noted in verse 5, he shows that the triumphing of the wicked is short, the joy of the hypocrite, but for a moment. Job's response to him in chapter 21. Eliphaz speaks again, chapter 22. Chapter 23 and 24, you have Job's response to Eliphaz. Notice in 23:10-12, these statements. He said, he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Did you say that? When he trieth me, I'll come forth as gold. My foot hath held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Could you say that? Great statements by a great man. Job 23:10-12. And then Bildad's third speech in chapter 25 and Job's response to him in chapter 26. Notice in verse 7, he said, he stretcheth out the north over the empty place and hangeth the earth upon nothing. How did Job know that? How could he say that? Those were scientific facts that were not discovered until centuries after. Only way is that God was guiding the pen of inspiration. That's scientific foreknowledge. Earth upon nothing. So you have the solar system spoken of, 26 and verse 7. And then verse 10, he hath compassed the waters with bounds until the day and night come to an end. There are bounds. Chapter 27. In verse 4, he said, my lips shall not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. It's a great statement. Chapter 28, he shows the value of wisdom. A lot of great statements. Verses 13-19, take note of that. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. And this great statement about wisdom, in verse 28, he said, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil, his understanding. No wonder he was a perfect and upright man that eschewed evil, feared God. In chapter 29, notice some things that he said in his closing speech, Verse 13, he said, the blessing of him that was ready to perish came upon me. I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. Could you say these things that he said? Verse 15, I was eyes to the blind, feet was out of the lame, a father to the poor. Remember the accusations they brought against him? False, not true. He said, the cause which I knew not, I searched out. Chapter 30, notice verse 23. I know that thou wilt bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living. Another great I know statement made by Job. And then in chapter 31, 1, a covenant we all need to make. He said, I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? 31, 1. And then you ought to read verses 4 through 40. It's a great statement. A lot of great statements. It really shows the righteousness of Job and things that are involved in being righteous. He said in verse 4, doth not he see my ways, count all my steps? And then a lot of if I's. If I have walked with vanity, if my foot hath hasted to deceit, if my step hath turned out of the way, if mine heart have been deceived by a woman, if. 4 through 40. Then you have Elihu come on the scene. Chapter 32. He explains his desire to speak. 21:22, a great statement he made about flattering titles. He said, if I gave flattering titles, my maker would soon take me away. Remember all that? 32 through 37, Elihu is doing the speaking. In chapter 34, verses 35 through 37, he said, Job has spoken without knowledge. His words were without wisdom. My desire is that Job may be tried unto the end because of his answers for wicked men. For he had a rebellion unto his sin. He clappeth his hands among us and multiplieth his words against God. That's his accusation against Job. Chapter 35, 16. Therefore doth Job open his mouth in vain. He multiplieth words without knowledge. And then the Lord answers Job in chapter 38. In verse 8, who shut up the sea with doors when it break forth as if it had issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud, the garment thereof, and thick darkness, swaddling band for it. Break up for it my decreed place and set bars and doors and said, hitherto shalt thou come, but no further. And here shall thy pride ways be stayed. That's ocean boundary. The seas have their bounds. God made it that way. 38, 8 through 11. 13 and 14 talks about the fact that the earth is round, circular, is turned as clay to the seal, the rotation of the earth, 13 and 14, turned as clay to the seal. A lot of scientific foreknowledge in the book of Job, as you see. 38, 13 and 14. The Lord gives Job opportunity to speak. He answered in chapter 43 through 5, and he said, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I'll lay mine hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I'll proceed no further. And so the Lord answers. Again, out of the whirlwind, chapter 40. Notice in chapter 42, and in verse 2, Job said, I know that thou canst do everything, that no thought can be withholden from thee. Do you know that? Do you know the things that Job knew? And then adversity, tragedy, suffering can be a great teacher. We can come to learn things we had not known before. We can come to see God as we've never seen him before. As he said in verse 5, 42:5, I've heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Lessons to be learned when you're ill or when you're suffering. Can be a great teacher. 42:5. And in verse 7, the Lord had spoken these words unto Job. The Lord said to Eliphaz, my wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends. Ye have not spoken to me the thing that is right, as my servant Job hath. He's vindicated. And so he says, take seven bullocks, seven rams, go to my servant Job and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering. And my servant Job shall pray for you. For him will I accept, lest I deal with you after your folly, and that you have not spoken to me the thing which is right, like my servant Job. So that helps you understand the things that are said in light of the context. And the Lord puts his stamp of approval upon Job. And if you'd been Job, would you have prayed for your friends who had accused you of these things when they added to your grief? They came to comfort you, but they accuse you of sin, and they say your speeches are like wind, and you're speaking words without knowledge, and it's because you've been such an evil, unrighteous, sinful man that all these things have happened. They went and did according as the Lord commanded. The Lord accepted Job, turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also, the Lord gave Job what? Twice as much as he had before. The Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. He doubled it, as you read verse 12. He lived to see his sons and his sons' sons, even four generations. So Job died being old and full of days. And he is mentioned along with Noah and Daniel in Ezekiel 14:14 as righteous and remembered for his patience in James 5:11. Behold the patience of Job. What a masterpiece. May we learn the lessons that are set forth. So the answer to our questions, yes, God can trust man to serve him with no immediate reward in sight. Job showed that to be the case. And man can trust God, though he's unable to explain the cause of his suffering. Don't know what you're going through, maybe. Or you may not know why you're going through it. But if you'll trust God and retain your integrity and continue to serve him faithfully, then what about the latter end? If you'll be patient, persevere, and endure, good things come to those who wait. God blesses those who are righteous. What's your key takeaway from the book of Job, Nicholas? Trust in God. Richard? Thank you for being with us tonight. Hope you've enjoyed the book. Psalms are next, Lord willing, next Wednesday. Begin to read through those and benefit from our survey of the book of Psalms.